Alright, my name is Sean Fallon. You're listening to Episode 9, Heroes. Welcome to From First to Last.
No one told you. Maybe I hear the blues are calling toss.
Hello again and welcome again. My name is Sean Fallon. This is From First to Last. My guest today, he's a writer, he's a podcaster, he's our only hope, he's Bubba Wheat. Good morning, Bubba Wheat, how are you?
Good morning to you. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you here, man. And I don't know what it's like in America at the moment. It's all dark and rainy and cold in Australia this early morning, but we'll get through it.
Yeah, over here it's the weather's pretty nice. It's a nice afternoon, early summer day.
Delightful. Okay, but wait, what show did you choose for us today?
Well, I chose Heroes. Yeah, I figure it's it was the only one on your short list that was superhero centered. Since my blog and podcast are both superhero focused, I figured that was the best choice for me.
Definitely. Well, in the future, when Arrow and Flash and Supergirl all finish, you'll have to come back and just do all of them. So Heroes ran for 77 episodes from September 2005 till February 2010 for four seasons. What's your experience with Heroes?
Well, I definitely remember watching it whenever it first came out, and I watched the entire first episode. I was completely hooked. I mean, the first season, I was completely hooked on it. I believe at least the first half of the second season, and that's kind of where I fell off. And then I got back into it in the fourth season, and I did watch the at least the majority of the fourth season whenever it also first aired. But then I didn't touch it until just last year, whenever Heroes Reborn, late last year, whenever Heroes Reborn was coming out. And so I started rewatching and reviewing the episodes on the first season for one of my sites, channelsuperhero.com. Like, I really enjoyed where it was going, but then I just kind of ran out of spare time and dropped off after about six or seven episodes of the first season, and then the same thing with Heroes Reborn.
No, same. I watched the first season. I got like the box set or whatever, and I binged it really quickly and absolutely adored it. I just thought it was the best thing going. And then same, like I started watching the second season, and I think I only got about three or four episodes into it. And because I was watching it sort of week to week, I think it just got to a point where like I missed a week and I just didn't care. And then I missed the next week and so on and so on. And then I never went back to it until doing this podcast, when I just sort of obviously rewatched the first one and then just watched the last one in a vacuum. And I never went anywhere near Heroes Reborn because, yeah, I remember watching the first season and just thinking it was amazing. And then the second season just didn't feel like it did anything. It didn't go anywhere. It was just like four episodes of wheel spinning, and my interest just completely waned.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for this podcast, obviously we've rewatched the first episode. What did you think of the first episode watching it now?
Well, I think the first episode holds up really well, and it's great because it has so many hints of what's to come. And watching it after knowing what happens throughout the entire season, it's fun to see like the origins of a lot of these things.
It's interesting to watch because it is just wall to wall origin stories, isn't it? You know, every character appears and they have to quickly sort of establish like who the character is, what their situation is, and what their power is. And they do about five or six in that first episode. You know, they do get a lot of they start spinning a lot of plates very early on.
Mm-hmm.
Which is impressive. I did think like rewatching it, it's a lot of it's a lot of telling and not showing. You know, there's a few kind of interactions and conversations where it's just one character saying to another. Well, the thing that stood out to me was when Mahinda's in Madras and he's talking to his colleague, and the colleague basically, everything the colleague says is for our benefit, not Mahinda's. So Mahinda says, like, oh, my father's gone missing. And the friend says, I know, your father was my best friend, and he was a great geneticist. And like, yeah, Mahinda knows what his father's job was. Chill, man. And there's sort of quite a few lines of that back and forth. But I think for the like you're saying, for the amount of origin stories they managed to do, it's not as clunky. It's not nowhere near as clunky as it could have been.
And on top of that, it's a little surprising looking back on it now how few special effects there are. There's only like three moments of special effects in the entire episode.
Even like the flying stuff at the end is very much just sort of like wire work. They haven't gone for anything too stylized. It's and the way they film that final scene with Peter jumping and then like Nathan catching him in the air, I think that does well. The camera just very, very close in on them and they're just spinning around, and I thought that was a great. I remember watching it the first time and that being a really good twist at the end that, you know, Peter was the sort of idealistic like dreamer character, and Nathan was all very no nonsense, but it's Nathan who can fly. And I thought, okay, that's a cool twist. And like you say, you're sort of like, well, the setup from there is like, well, where's this going? You know, where this is interesting, and I want to follow this down the hole a little bit more and see how this is going to fit into the bigger picture.
Yeah, although it's just a little bit frustrating whenever you know what's going on. You know that, like, I remember that Peter, his power is that he can absorb other people's powers. And so he can't fly himself, but he can fly when he's around Nathan.
Yeah, because his power, yeah, because he was like, I think they called it was like super empathy, wasn't it? Like if he was near someone, he absorbed their power while he was near them, which is pretty cool. And I think they do establish that well. Like, I think one thing that I remember frustrating me about Heroes then, it sort of came back to me now, was they kind of struggled to decide who their main character was. Like it should it, if I, okay it should be Peter, but then as the show goes on, I think my main frustration was, is it Nikki, the character who has like the bad version of herself in the mirror?
Yeah, and that one is still one where I still don't really know what her superpower is. Like I know what she does, what she can do, but it just doesn't make sense, really.
No, that's very true. And then like I remember, because her plot line never really intersects with the others, like as the show goes on. I remember like everyone else is part of the save the cheerleader, save the world plot, and she's just doing her own thing in the background. And
Although she
then
does have some connections, like, I mean, every character in this, like that has powers, is connected to at least one other character, and usually two to three in weird ways. Like, she's this internet stripping model charging $39 an hour, which seems so quaint now.
Yeah.
And her main client is Ando, Hiro's friend.
Yes, of course. Yeah, that's later on. Oh, yeah, because she's tied in with Malcolm McDowell, as like when he appears, like the gangster,
Yeah,
and that
Linderman.
gangster's linked to Lindemann. Yeah, I just remember like watching the show and it building and building and building to that final thing, and it was when they're in New York and someone's gonna explode, isn't it? Ted Sprague is gonna explode. And you're waiting to see how each character's going to be involved in it. And then all Nikki does is, I think she runs over and she hits Silo with a parking meter. And that was it. And that was her whole thing. And you're like, and she was such a major part in every single episode. Like her plot line was constantly, other characters would disappear for a couple of episodes, but she'd always be there front and center. And that was it. Like, oh, thank Christ she was there to hit him with a parking meter. Who knows what we would have done.
Yeah, I didn't even like I don't remember much of the latter half of the first season, other than like I knew it involved the exploding man, and Siler wanted to steal his power, and then Peter did steal his power, and then wasn't it Nathan that flew him up into the sky so he exploded harmlessly in the air? And it just kind of it was one of those where if the internet was what it was now, there would be so much backlash against the season finale.
Yeah, I think so. And I remember just thinking, well, I think that was a big problem for me as well with as the show went on, because that was obviously the big finish of, like, they defeated Sila, and then the two brothers sacrificed themselves to save New York, and then the next season started, and all three of those characters were still alive. And you're like, well, what was the point then? What was the point of any of this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote something for, like, audienceseverywhere.net is, like, the movie site I write for, and I was writing something about shows that should get, like, the Fargo treatment, so they should just be, like, self-contained seasons, like anthology shows. And I thought Heroes would have been a great one. Like, if you had that first season and you could have given it, like, a definite ending and, like, ended a few characters' plot lines and killed off a few characters and all that, it would have been much better. But because Sila's character was so popular with the public that they had to bring him back.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at, like, the final episode, they had to bring him back and eventually make him a good guy as well.
Yeah.
Which I think, I'd like to think that that would be something that if that happened in, like, on a TV show today, like, everyone on Twitter would be pissed off of just like, oh, you've just, like, taken this character and now he's the breakout character, so you've got to make him a good guy because you can't have people be fans of someone who
is a serial killer.
Yeah, because he just cuts people, the top of people's heads off, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was his deal. Like,
yeah, he had a very similar power to Peter, where he would absorb other people's powers, but he had to kill them in the process. Or
yeah.
He may not have had to kill them in the process, but he did anyways.
I remember there being a bit of, like, a thing of, was he eating their brains? Was he just looking at their brains? What was the deal like? And I don't think I ever got an answer to that.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
But there were a few other things that I noticed looking back at the first episode of Heroes that I think is really interesting, that there is so much of, like, a daddy issue. Like,
yeah.
The missing father is so present in almost every character, because we have Nathan and Peter, their father has died, and I believe he had committed suicide or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we also have Nikki, and is a single mother. So her husband and Micah's father is absent and a criminal, which we find out in later episodes. And even Peter, like, he's with this with the woman with his job, and he's working with this her elderly father who's dying.
Yeah, and Mahinda is only in New York because his father's just died.
Right.
Yeah, this show being around, and it was obviously around the same time as Lost, and Lost was very much that as well. It was constant sort of daddy issues or stepdaddy issues or father figure issues. You know, it was always like, there was always flashbacks to how, you know, a father's death or a father being a deadbeat was always, it was sort of a, like, I feel like Heroes and Lost were very much like sister shows at the same time. There was, like, an ensemble of characters. There was tons of weirdness. Sometimes it worked really well. Sometimes it was completely just, you know, off the mark. Like, it was interesting to sort of, because I was watching the shows at the same time as well, and you would see those sort of crossover things. And like you say, that was one of them, of like, okay, so there's just a bunch of writers at the moment who just have tons of daddy issues and they're just putting them all in their work, like,
yeah.
Which is very, very weird to see. One thing that I did have a bit of a problem with in the first episode, and I think it goes through the whole season, is they're kind of stuck with the, well, more of the first episode, they've got to introduce so many characters and all the characters are so separated that it does have that bit of a disjointed feel of we're just jumping around. And I was trying to think of other shows that had like a big ensemble cast and how they sort of made it work. And I thought of like Lost and Game of Thrones. But I guess with Lost and Game of Thrones, every character started in the same place and then you sort of dispersed them. Whereas Heroes was doing it the other way. You had people all over the world, all over the country, and then the show was the other way around of like, how do you get all these people into the same place?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, eventually they did do it pretty well, but there was just a few moments in that first episode where I was just getting a bit frustrated because you'd just like cut to some random place and they'd sort of very quickly sort of tell you who this character was and just be like, oh, well, he's a painter And his situation is he's hooked on heroin, and his power is that he can paint the future. Right, let's move somewhere else. And you jump to Japan, and they do a bit of Japan stuff, and then you jump somewhere else. I did make a note, actually. You know Isaac, the painter, and he's like, he's going to go cold turkey. He's like, oh, I'll go cold turkey off heroin. And then there's a scene where he's just, like, staring at a full heroin works on the table. You're like, no, mate, if you're going to go cold turkey, get all the heroin out of your house. Don't sit and stare at it. That's how cold turkey works. You're obviously going to go back on it.
I also loved how heroes, like one of the other surprise breakout characters was Hiro Nakamura. Yeah. And it was just so great how they introduced him as a character, because that's not something that, it's still not something that's done, to have like an Asian character, and he's not like, he is nerdy, so he does have that connection to the US, I think, but he doesn't speak hardly any English except for like 2 to 3 words over the course of the whole first episode. And it's not until like near the end of the first season whenever he starts to speak more English. And it's just,
yeah, no,
it's great to see something like that, and where the show doesn't have to handhold the audience by having him like immediately speaking English.
Yeah, no, and he's not, you know, he's not based, he's not Japanese, but Japanese American. You know, he's fully Japanese. And I think also as well, there was the cool touch of like when him and Ando are talking, and you've got like the subtitles, the way they sort of frame them like they're speech bubbles in a comic book. You know, they're not just always running along the bottom, they're sort of all around, and certain words will bold and things like that. I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that sort of again makes me think of Lost, because obviously Lost had Sun and I can't remember their names now, but they had the two Korean characters. And again, like that was the same sort of thing of like, they couldn't speak any English. Well, actually, there was a twist that one of them could. But that sort of thing as well of taking that risk of not introducing the character. And like you say, just having it so they were instantly bilingual, you know, like, because Hiro, because that was a great twist, actually. I remember in the first season, like Hiro was, he could only speak Japanese. And then future Hiro, when he came back and he was like, all dressed really cool, and he had the samurai sword, and he could speak fluent English.
Yeah.
And that was like a really cool twist of like, ah, so how's that going to happen? When's he going to get fully, you know, integrated and get and be able to talk to people? I thought that was, like you say, not something you see very often,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. Like it would be cool to see more of that, because a show that this show sort of reminded me of, I don't know if you've seen it, is Sense8.
I've heard of it, but I haven't watched it.
I've watched a couple of episodes, and that's sort of very similar to this in the sense that you've got like a bunch of characters, but they're spread out globally, and they sort of can, I don't know, actually I've only watched a couple of episodes, I'm still working out. They can sort of communicate with their minds and swap places and stuff like that. And they are spread out all around the world, but if I recall, it's everyone can speak English, or everyone speaks English all the time. Like, even if it's a character in Korea, and it's a Korean actress and a Korean character, they're all speaking English, and the character who's Indian in India is the same thing. And, yeah, like you said, it's refreshing to actually see a Japanese character doing Japanese stuff in Japan, speaking Japanese, on an American show. And like you say, be the breakout character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than Siler, he would probably be, he's the most well-known character from the show. And he's like one of the few cast members other than Horn-Rim Glasses that came back for Heroes Reborn.
Mm. Well, I know, I was reading an interview with, I think it's Brian, like Brian Fuller became a writer on this show for a while. And he said, like, one of the problems they had was, obviously, you had Hiro being super popular and just a really likable, cool character, but his powers were too good. Like, mm-hmm. So any sort of threat they ever faced, you know, he could... Because I was thinking that in the last episode, which we'll come to more in depth in a moment, but, like, they're all trying to get to New York to get to the bad guy. And you're like, well, Hiro, just teleport over, grab the dude, teleport out, put him in the middle of the desert or something. But then, so they had to distract Hiro all the time. Like, it was like, oh, we'll make him ill, or we'll put him somewhere else. And they were constantly doing that.
Yeah, he spent like a whole half a season in the past training with David Anders, the, what was his name? The guy that made the sword.
Adam something? No. I remember watching the second season and obviously he was in the past. I was like, oh yeah, this is going to be awesome. And it had that sort of, the thing with the second season is what it kept doing, where like, I think he had to save someone in like feudal Japan. And then he did. And then it was like, okay, hero, it's time to go home. And he's like, nah, I'll stick around. Like, what? And then they just kept him there. And then like, there was a thing with Peter where he was in, I think he was in Ireland. And like some little gang, and like the boss was like, oh, we've got this box of your possessions. If you help us do this bank job, we'll give you the box. So they do the bank job. And then at the end, the guy gives him the box and he goes, you know what? I'm not going to open it. And that was how the episode ended. And then the next episode started and he opened the box and there was nothing in it. Like, oh, I hate this show now. And that was it. I think that was the end for me. I think he opens the box and there's like a picture of someone in it and a key. And I was like, oh, I need something more concrete after so much build up and so much like, you know what? I'm not going to open the box. Okay, I'll open the box. Oh, there's nothing in it. Like, oh, wow, this is riveting television. and like you say, the thing with Hero is like they had to throw him into the past and keep him there. Like, it would be very easy for him to kind of go like, oh, yeah, I saved the day, right? And jumped back to the future. Like, oh, you've got an issue with this thing? Don't worry, I'll just grab whoever that is and teleport them into the center of the ocean. Done. So that was that they said that was a problem. Like, they couldn't kill the character off because he was too popular, but he was too powerful for them to just keep him as a, you know, main character.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, I think goes back to what I was saying about making the show like an anthology thing, like a whole season of just like, Hero would have been ace, you know. Hero is the main character, bunch of other people around him, and then you can focus on him and see how you can use his powers, but you don't have to keep going after that. You can just have him like in one season and then just close the box and leave it.
Yeah, and so. And I think it's they do have a nice moment with him jumping ahead to the final episode, his scene with Charlie.
Yeah, that was handy because I'd seen those episodes, so I got that reference and I was like, oh, okay, cool. So that's a nice little ending to his story.
Mm-hmm. And it's also nice that it gives him a reason to not use his powers. It explains like sometimes it's his powers aren't the correct solution.
Yeah, no, that's true. Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about, what did you think of the last episode?
Well, it was a little bit confusing because it is one of those final episodes where everything is kind of coming together. And so not having watched the lead up to this final episode right beforehand, it took a good like 15-20 minutes to catch my bearings and remember how everything fit together.
Yeah, no, I was the same. Like, I watched it on Netflix, and they didn't do like a previously on Heroes.
Mm-hmm.
So it just started, and the horn rimmed glasses dude and Claire were in a caravan buried alive, and I was like, okay, I'll work out what that is later. And just like you say, just sort of like, okay, so Silas a good guy, who's the dude who's like loads of people at the same time, like having to sort of, because that happens to me quite a lot on this podcast. Like, I'll end up just watching a last episode of a show I haven't watched for years, or I haven't watched the build-up. And I'm starting to get better at just sort of detective work of working it out. Like, oh, okay, so this guy's this guy. And, okay. Or building the story in my own head. Just like, oh, I'll just pretend this has happened. You know?
Yeah, it helped for me because I had watched those episodes. So it, like, it was a combination of reading the clues that are within the episode and also having that jog some of my memory of what I remembered.
Yeah, it was weird for me because a lot of the characters I recognized, but there was a lot of characters who must have left the show. But there weren't that many new hero characters. There weren't that many new goodies. So
yeah.
That was in like, it was just like
and
the
it
actress
was
who played Nikki.
Yeah, it was really bizarre to see the character that played Nikki / Jessica in the first few seasons is now playing, and I believe that they do explain it that she was actually like a triplet and she's the third one, so she is related to those two characters, or the one character, two characters in one body, whatever.
Yeah, that was it, because when she sort of like turned into water, I was like, that's not her power. That wasn't, and then they were like, oh, Tracy, like, who's Tracy? What's any of this? That was probably the most confusing thing. That was the thing that, like, when the episode finished, I was like, I've got to jump on Wikipedia and see what this situation is like. And yeah, so Nikki and her evil twin, but she actually had, so it was Nikki, her evil twin, and a triplet whose power was completely different to the other two. That's what they went for in the end.
And there was the multiple man played by not Vince Vaughn, and there was the puppet the puppet master played by Fat Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, that's very good. Well, that guy was like, when that guy appeared, I was like, I instantly thought of like 1960s Batman. Like I was waiting for the like the Dutch angle to start, like the camera to turn, and it to be like, oh my god, it's Egghead, you know, or whatever. Like that was, I think like I hadn't read good reviews of like the last season of the show, but that sort of, I loved the setting. I thought the carnival setting was really cool, like, and that sort of idea of this carnival of like baddie superpowered people. I thought that was cool, and I loved. Well, when T-Bag from Prison Break showed up, like he was playing Samuel, I was like, "Oh, T-Bag! I loved him in Prison Break." And then when he started to talk, and I was like, "Oh, is that an Irish accent, or is it a carnival accent, or what?" And I could not place it. And then when I wikied that character, and it was like he's from New Jersey. Like, what? Now what's happening? So it, I don't know. That was just a bit of a weird one. That shook me, and I was waiting for that character to do something, and it never really happened.
Yeah, he just has a little battle of wills with Peter and some ground shaking.
Yeah, like as a season finale, and and eventually obviously a series finale, it did a lot of work that should have been like in the episode before. Like I've always said, like the last episode of a season, the last episode of a series, it should just be dominoes falling. Like all the dominoes should be in place by that point. Like if you watch the final episode of Buffy, mm-hmm. like that episode is just like they've built up to this battle. So that episode is just like battle straight away. Little bit of build up and then mostly just the big fight. And the same with a few others. But this one reminded me more of like the finale of The X-Files, which was more build up. And then very little payoff. And it's like, okay, well, all that build-up should have already happened. Or, you know, it should have ended all in Central Park with some big cacophonous battle between these characters. And instead, like you say, it was just like build-up to them, like Peter and Samuel sort of pretending to push each other and then just like the ground rising a bit. And then it just stopped. And then Samuel just got arrested, I think. And that was the end of it. And you're like, oh, wow, what a great... Like, you know, there's like so much build up to like this. Oh my god, he's gonna do this thing, but they never say what the thing is gonna be.
Yeah,
see it anyway.
And it's a carnival full of people that have special powers, but in this last episode, we only see two of them use their powers. We don't like. I don't even remember what Ray Park could do, the guy with the knife.
Yeah, when I saw Ray Park on the credits, I was like, oh yeah. This is going to be ace. Because Ray Park is Darth Maul, and he's Toad, and he's the Headless Horseman. And like, oh, this is going to be amazing, because he's going to come in and do some awesome stuff. And I can't think of anything he did now. He put a knife to the porn room glasses guy's throat, then took it away, and then ended. I'm like, oh, do a flip or something, you know what I mean? So you had the Puppet Master character, and you had, I guess Samuel can control Earth? He's like Quake? He can just make
Yeah, I guess he's like Quake mixed with Magneto.
Okay.
Which I think very... Well, Magneto just as far as his personality, I think.
Ah, okay. And then... But he's only powerful if he's got the carnival people with it?
Yeah, just based on what they mentioned, like... His power increases the more people with powers are around him.
And then, yeah, it was very, like, it was interesting, actually, because I did, as soon as I finished it, I read, like, a review on, of, like, the coverage of it, like, a recap on AV Club. And the person reviewing it had the same questions that I've got now. And they'd watched the whole show. And they were sort of like, yeah, it didn't, there wasn't enough of this explained. It was sort of, it felt like it was being written as it was filmed. You know, it was just sort of, oh, well, what happens next? Claire runs in and she talks them out of it. Well, that's not very you know, that's not very action-packed. Whatever, just do it, you know. Like, I was waiting for this big firework that never really came, and there was a really cool scene I liked where Samuel's sort of having a bit of an argument, and then he runs out on the stage, and all the, like, the spotlights go on him, and he's like, do you want to see a show? Like, the spotlight's hit, and all the crowd goes wild. I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome now. He's going to bury everyone. And then he just sort of made everything shake a bit, and then it ended. Oh, and then Peter flew into him, and then that was it. You're like, oh, okay,
yeah,
great. And that just, it keeps lifting. Like, I think that was always the really frustrating thing about Heroes when it went bad. It's like, you've got this really good concept, really good characters. Why isn't this working?
Yeah, they keep building up your expectations, and then they just undercut it.
Just like the finale, you feel like it's going to be really fast-paced, and it was very much like, we've got to get to Central Park before he does whatever. And then they just very slowly made their way there, and then it ended. And then, like, the big sort of finale is Claire Bennett jumping off the Ferris wheel, which again was really odd in the sense of, like, that whole sequence where, like, the news reporters are there, and she's like, oh, just watch what I'm about to do. And then she runs off, and no one tries to stop her. And they're all like, oh, let's just watch this teenage girl commit suicide, and let's just film it. Like, because she's clearly climbing up to jump off, you know, and they act like, oh my god, she jumped off. Like, well, she walked up and walked out over the precipice and then jumped. So obviously she was going to jump, and you just happily filmed it, you know, and it's just very, very odd. And just, and I know they were sort of going for the callback, I guess, to the first episode where she jumps off. And all that Claire stuff in the very first episode, I think that is killer. I think that's great. Like, where she keeps injuring herself, and they kind of go for sort of a lot of the gross out stuff of, like, her pushing her ribs back in and the garbage disposal mangling her fingers.
Yeah.
I think they do that really well. I think she's a great character.
Although, at the same time, I don't really like the Claire character as a whole, because it feels like they're, because she refers to it all as attempt number, and she has these numbers, which obviously makes it seem like maybe the first attempt was a suicide attempt, but that character is not portrayed as someone who is suicidal at all.
Well, I've got that in my notes. Like, every other character gets the tell, don't show treatment, and every one of their actions gets explained. Like, with Peter, it's like, oh, I think I can fly. And everyone's like, of course you think you can fly. You're a dreamer. You're too, you know, you've got too much empathy. And every character gets that little thing. But then, like you say, Claire Bennett jumps off her height and says, oh, it's attempt number 6. And there's no point where someone says to her, like, oh, okay, well, what are we, you know, no one says what they're attempting to do. Like, is she attempting to kill herself? Is she attempting to push her powers to the limit or what? Like, it just says attempt, but, you know, she's just, you're completely spot on. There's never a thing of, like, oh, this poor girl's trying to kill herself and she can't, which would have been a very, very interesting plot line.
Yeah, and it feels like that's where it's going, because everything that she does to try to hurt herself feels like it's something, it's like a self-harm, like a self-mutilation that's just not working. But at the same time, she's just so, she treats it like it's nothing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, because she's like, if you follow that line, and like you're saying, if the idea of the first attempt was she's tried to kill herself and failed, and then she's just continued to attempt it, when she's sort of like after attempt 6, like I said before about pushing the ribs in, she's just sort of like, oh, again, and just pushes them back in. You're like, no, the two things don't match up, because she should either be really angry that she can't kill herself, or really scared that it won't work. But she's too blasé about it. Like, maybe it was just too dark for network TV, but I think that idea of a character who's trying to kill themselves, but their body won't let them do it, that would be a fascinating thing to run through the show to get to the point where, you know, by the end of the show, her powers have, like, saved the world. So, you know, then it's all worked. Like, it's all come full circle. But, yeah, I didn't really, I never actually gave it that much thought, but you're definitely right.
She has some moments in there, like she reaches out to the outcast kid with the headphones, And the one trivia I read was that he was supposed to be like a gay character, and he was supposed to eventually come out as being gay, but his agents didn't want him to be that gay character because he was up for the role of John Connor in one of the Terminator sequels.
Yeah, which is disgusting. Like, it's just a crazy thing. But, like, yeah, there is a thing, isn't there, where she gets... Didn't she get, like, elected class president or something? Because all the geeks and the goths and everything back her or something like that. There is, like, a sense that she is... She's the cheerleader who is more of an outsider, but she sort of is trapped as a... I can't really remember, but... Yeah, they sort of posit something and never follow up on it. And I think because it was, like, a cool image of her jumping off and then just, like, snapping her arm back into place... I never really gave the dialogue any thought. I just sort of breezed along.
Yeah, because she talks about like how hard it is being popular and how she has homecoming coming up and like going back to the... And then she has her family life, which going back to the daddy issues, she's adopted. So she doesn't know who her real parents are. And she has the horn rim glasses, Noah Bennett as her father, who is this... basically hero's hunter, and she doesn't know it, and she has this completely oblivious mother.
That I'd forgotten about that mother character, where she's like with the dog, and that whole sequence was actually a bit cringe worthy, where it's like, oh, I walked through fire and I didn't get burned, and the mother's like, ah, oh, we all walk through metaphorical fires and this and this, and it's like, what is this?
And then she ends it with, isn't that right, Mr. Muggles?
yeah, and just like kisses the dog. The telling not showing thing of like a character, like stuff being told for our benefit, that sort of hit its peak for me when at the end Claire's just mangled her fingers in the garbage disposal and they fixed, and then you hear like the front door open and like a honey, I'm home, and the mother turns to Claire and goes, it's your father, and then walks like, yeah, come on. She knows, and we get it, we can make the connection as well, you know, we can work that out. But it's like very quickly, oh, he's your father. Ready, get ready for a twist. You know, just get ready for this.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very unfortunate.
Yeah, and it is set up where it feels like there is a lot of setup for twists. But whenever you know the twists, it's really, it falls a lot flatter.
Yeah, like, I remember the first time I watched it, well, God, which has been nearly 10 years ago now. Like, the first time I watched it, and when the father comes, Noah Bennett comes home, I was like, ooh, that's cool. And then watching it this time, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that's a thing. You know, I feel as though, like, when, I think at the dinner table, it's like, you know, they're talking about the father not being there, and like, oh, he's on business overseas, and he'll be here soon. I was like, I was instantly just like, oh, yeah, it's this guy. And I don't know whether now, with a bit more of, like, you know, television intelligence, I would have just gone, oh yeah, it's that guy. Yeah, just straight away got the twist from that line of dialogue. Like, it's not, it is quite, what's the word? It's sort of foreshadowed, but I don't know how subtly it is. I'd have to find someone who'd never watched it before and shove them in front of the TV and say, go. Tell me if this is a twist or not.
Yeah, and there's, I think, one other thing that I know it is between the first episode and the last episode as far as diversity, which... There's not a ton of diversity, but there's a lot more in the first season than there is at the end, because we have Hero and Ando, which show up in both places,
mm-hmm.
and then we have Mohinder, which disappears by the end, and we also have Micah as a person of color. But in the last episode, it's really just Hero and Ando.
I mean, yeah, Mohinder was sort of, I remember him being like a major, like, main character. Like, I always, there is that thing in the first series of where they're trying to, first season where, like, Peter's the main character, but I always sort of thought that Mohinder was the main character. Like, he was the sort of thing that connected mm-hmm. them all.
Yeah, he's like the voice, like, he's the outsider. He's the only one that doesn't have any power. So he's like the audience surrogate in a way.
Yeah, that's very true. And, like, he's the one who's trying to put it all together. And he has some great episodes, because I know there was a whole arc in the center of, like, season one where he's taking Sila on a road trip to find the other heroes because he thinks Sila's someone else. So he keeps introducing Sila to these superpowered people, and then when they go somewhere else, that Night Siler will just go back and kill them and take their powers and move on. Like, and I thought that was, you had that constant sort of wolf in sheep's clothing thing that was good.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you say, by the end of the show, Micah's gone. Micah's father's gone. Hero and Ando are sort of side characters. Mohinder's gone. Yeah, it is just the sort of like Claire, Noah, Tracy, Peter, Siler, and Matt. Just like, yeah, just six of the whitest white guys.
Yeah, and even the, like the entire circus is all a bunch of white people.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. It's
the only extra bit of diversity that they add is the deaf cello player.
Yeah, I think there was like, with the sort of silent extras in the carnival, there was a few people of color who just had like wacky costumes on, and they just had, their whole thing was just to look shocked when Claire appears, and that was it. No one had any agency, no one did anything. Which is, like you say, which is a shame, because when the show first started, like, they did have, it was cool to have, you know, characters from foreign countries who were from foreign countries, like, they would come from other places to New York, like Hero and Ando. It's interesting that, like you say, by the end, they just stripped that all away, just to go as white as possible. It's a shame, really.
Mm-hmm.
Heroes was definitely one of those shows that just sort of, I think it just burnt too brightly. At first, it was too hot and too bright. It was just like, I remember watching the first season and just being a little bit overwhelmed by like Hero and Peter and Siler. Like by the end of the show, all of them just had too much power. Siler's got too many powers, and Peter could just have everyone's power. And you end up with that sort of like, there was that, I remember always being a criticism when I was growing up of Superman. Like, people weren't fans of Superman because he just had too many powers. It sort of took something of the fun away because you knew that there weren't that many characters who could defeat him. And I think that was just a case of like, if a good writer came in, they could make you care. And I think Heroes sort of just didn't have those good writers after a while.
Mm-hmm.
Like they sort of lost that ability. Like, well, it was like I was saying before about, they were stuck in the sense of, they had breakout characters like Siler and Hero, but those two characters were hugely powerful, so you couldn't really threaten them, but you couldn't kill them off because they were too popular. So you were stuck just like balancing, how do you use these, like, these two god characters and not just ruin every plot line?
Yeah, and there's also like, they don't focus too much on the fact that people having these abilities aren't known to the general populace. It's just this, it's basically like Primatech Paper and other people with powers are the only ones that know about this, and it goes, and it's that way for 4 years until Claire finally reveals herself at the end. And then that is something that they focus on a bit more in Heroes Reborn, because they have a whole, like, it's an alternate timeline where it's in the present, but it's in this alternate present where people with abilities are actually now in hiding because they had been hunted.
Ah, right. Yeah, it was definitely a shame that they didn't sort of pull that trigger earlier and go for like how to integrate, because they could have then sort of had like a couple of seasons of them being secret and then just gone like full like Watchmen, like, you know, what happens if you have superpowered people or heroes with capital H in the real world, and how do they interact, and gone for that and sort of, you know, built up to that idea of like a registration act or like them being hunted or hunted or anything, but sitting on that for 4 years and then dropping that once the show sort of run out of steam is unfortunate, really. It's a bit of a waste, because it might have sort of given this show a bit of a shot in the arm that it definitely needed.
Yeah, and I will say that Even though I didn't finish the season, I was really enjoying where Heroes Reborn was going during those first few episodes. I just kind of lost track of my free time, and by the time I realized that I had missed a few episodes, I was so far behind that it just was such a mountain to climb back up. I just kind of let it drop. And it feels like it's, I haven't heard if it's, I doubt that it's, that it got nearly enough ratings to get renewed. I think it did okay, but it needed to do really well just based on the budget.
Yeah, no, I think, I did read the other day that it's not been renewed. I think it had the problem of, like, the built-in audience of like Heroes fans isn't that big an audience.
Yeah, and it basically fizzled out with the first season and never really developed this cult following. Like, everyone still thinks of the first season as being good and the rest of them being crap.
Yeah, there is like, I remember reading something on Twitter the other day, like someone mentioned Heroes and someone replied, "Oh yeah, Heroes, that show that only ran for one season and then got unfairly cancelled." And it's like, oh, okay, that's what we're doing then. We're just pretending that happened. Okay, that's fine. Just like, okay, it ran for a really good season and then just like, oh no, the studio just didn't get it and they cancelled it. Okay, that's fine. It wasn't interesting. I think it was such a shame that it just fizzled out and ran out of steam, because like it was definitely a bit before its time, because obviously now, as you obviously know, like the superhero genre on screen is the big genre now. It's like it's like westerns in the 50s and 60s, you know. It's just
and especially on TV. Yeah. I mean, I started Channel Superhero just 2 years ago, and there was, I think, 6 comic book TV shows that we were covering, and then the next year it grew to about a dozen, and then I think this next year there's going to be like about 20, probably. Because,
yeah, I mean,
aside from the big ones, there's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Supergirl, The Flash, Arrow, The Walking Dead, Preacher, Wynonna Earp is kind of a lesser known one that's sci-fi.
The Boys just got announced yesterday. Garth Ennis's book, The Boys, and Seth Rogen's going to have a hand in that as well, which is, well, I don't know if you've read The Boys, but it's a sort of violent satire on the superhero genre. Very, very interesting, very hit and miss, but very good when it's very good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you say, it's interesting because, like, when you say, like, you know, Supergirl, Flash, Arrow, it's interesting now that they're starting to move more into, like you say, Wynonna Earp, Preacher, The Boys, like, it's starting to expand out, like, past superheroes, just as, like, okay, any comic book stuff's really good now.
Mm-hmm.
And if Heroes, the show, appeared now, you know, not 10 years ago, and that first season was on, it would be interesting to see how well it did and how far it could go. Because it would have, obviously, I think, a much bigger fan base in the sense of, like, you know, that genre is the genre at the moment.
Yeah, although, I mean, in a way it did, just not in the same way that it could have.
Hmm. Yeah, I think it's always just going to be one of those shows that sort of, you know, it burned very brightly, but too brightly. You know, it was just one of those one seasons where they sort of, like, put all of their ideas in the first season, and then, like, oh, shit, how do we follow that up? And then just didn't know what to do. Anything else you'd like to add about Heroes? Anything you think you've missed? Anything in your notes that you sort of definitely want to get out?
Well, I mean, one thing, it's not a major thing, but I did enjoy how they really focused on a lot of the primary colors that helped sell the comic book nature. Like, I loved all of Isaac's paintings. And also there's a lot of, like, bright blues and bright reds just in the background. I think especially I've noticed it more around, like, Nikki and Micah, their characters, for some reason.
Hmm. Well, I think it was nice as well to watch, like, a superhero show predominantly in sunlight. You know, it wasn't all darkness and rain. It was quite nice to have, like you say, like, bright colours. Like, even the finale, when you had that set at nighttime, they really used that carnival set well for just, like, bright neon lights and big colours. And you were never lost. You know, it was always just sort of like, no, we're not going to put anyone in shadow here. It's just big, bright, garish sort of, like you say, comic book colors, like, which is nice to see, because sometimes there is that weird thing of, like, oh, it's comic booky, set it at night. Like, no, let's have some bright stuff. Let's, you know, Civil War showed us that you can have, like, the major battle in a movie being broad daylight, you know, at an airport, broad daylight, you can see everything, it's all cool. Not, it doesn't always have to be the gods fighting in the shadows. It can be bright colors, and we can go a bit garish and a bit cartoony, because after all, it is you know, it is comic book,
mm-hmm.
which is cool. I think sort of having a quick check of my notes, there's definitely nothing else that I definitely need to talk about. Yeah, so it's all very tell, don't show. And I think as well, talking about Hiro and Ando, they lean quite heavily on the isn't Japan weird cliche. You know, like I think that sort of culminates in when it's they're doing yoga on the roof, like the grass roof of a building during mm-hmm. the eclipse. It's like, okay, I get it. We know what the idea of Japan is. We get it. It's fine. Just let's keep moving.
And they also have the weird moment where Hiro's boss grabs him by the neck and drags him back to his cubicle.
Yeah, like, oh, okay, that's okay, we'll just breeze past that, that's normal, don't worry about it.
And they also have the gag where Ando's his first response to Hiro talking about teleporting is, why don't you go teleport into the women's bathroom?
Yeah, like, oh, that's unfortunate. but yeah, no, it's
And I'd also forgotten that Ando gets a power, which also isn't explained, where he, in the finale, he says that he can supercharge Hiro's ability.
Yeah, so I don't know whether they introduce a plot line where people can just, like, get powers. Because it's supposed to be evolution, isn't it? It's supposed to just be, it's like you say, it was all the connections, everyone was sort of connected or related or whatever to everyone else.
Mm.
Like, I think it's cheating if you just sort of have a character and then you're like, oh no, now he's got a power. Like, that's not fair. You've got to decide. Because the thing I liked about Ando, and it is like, he is one of those great characters in the sense of, he's not super powered, but he was a hero. You know, he went with Hiro where Hiro went, and he was brave, and he helped. And
he's like the voice of reason, too, because he's like, yeah. Why are you doing this? This doesn't make any sense. Why don't we just go back to Japan and go back to work?
Yeah, that's it. You know, and just, I think that's good. You do need that sort of character who, like when we were talking about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, we were talking about the Xander character.
Mm.
You know, he was, you know, he didn't have any superpowers or quirks or stuff like that, but he was just faithful and brave, and that was, you know, that's honorable in itself. And that was sort of the same thing on Heroes with Mohinder. You know, he didn't have a power, but he was in the mix all the time. You know, he wasn't sort of excluded because he couldn't fireballs out of his hands, you know, whatever. And it's sort of a bit, it feels like a bit of a cop-out that they've sort of gone, oh, well, what's Ando there for? Oh, we'll give him a power. Like, no, don't give him a power. He's there for what he's doing. Just leave him to do his thing. That's cool. But that's just me. I didn't get a chance to talk to the Heroes writers, so that's
right
into a vacuum.
And it's also nice just because Hiro is so, like, idealistic and so heavily influenced with, like, pop culture. And Ando gets those references, but he also realizes that they are just these pop culture references and they're not real life. And he really he's a great balance to Hiro in that way too.
Yeah, there's a line in the first episode where I think Ando says to him, like, well, how do you know you can teleport? And Hiro says, oh, issue 163, Kitty Pride, Days of Future Past.
Mm-hmm.
And Ando's like, a comic book? You know, it's like, this is what you're basing this on? You know, just to have that sort of grown-up character, I guess, to balance out Hiro's childishness is good.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a shame. I don't know. I think it's one of those things. Like, Heroes was such a good show, and it just never clicked in the end. But yeah, I think it is, like you say, you can take the first season and maybe just sort of watch that in a vacuum and hope for the best. where can people find you? Where can people find your stuff?
Well, they can find my writing and my podcasts at Flights, Tights, and Movie Nights.com, where I'm reviewing every superhero and comic book movie ever made, eventually. And I also have my FilmWise podcast on there, where I also cover more mainstream movies and classic films that I've never seen before, along with the superhero movie connection. And you can find pretty much everything that I do on Twitter, where I'm at Bubba Wheat.
Fantastic. I just listened to your FilmWise spotlight on Hulk. That's fantastic. Great, great podcast. Definitely one of those interesting movies that is aging well, I think, and it was very interesting to hear your sort of the people you got to speak about that was fascinating. So I definitely advise everyone to give that a listen.
Yeah, thank you. I've got another one of the spotlight episodes coming out in a couple weeks on Scott Pilgrim.
Ah, fantastic. Oh, well, that's definitely one I'll have to listen to, because I absolutely adore that film. People can find me at First to Last Pod on Twitter. And if you want, you can message me if you want to be a guest on the show. Just tell me what show you want to do and we'll work out a date. You can also email me directly from firsttolastpodcast@gmail.com. You can find movie writing that I've done at audiencesEverywhere.net, or you can follow me, like my personal account on Twitter, at equiatic_bind, EQUIATIC. Other than that, Bubba Wheat, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. And my name's Sean Fallon. This has been From First to Last. Goodbye. Sorry, I'm a little bit heavy.